The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome back to today's episode of the Hunting Public Podcast. It's myself and Greg Clements sitting here. How you doing today, Greg?
Doing great.
Not
as much hair today.
Not as much hair on the episode,
Zach,
that's for sure.
Zach is currently driving back in from the field, but he'll be here before too long.
Yeah, he's probably just going to join us halfway through the podcast, and then we're going to get filled in on this morning's hunt. Him and Brody went out to a good spot this morning, actually the same spot where they had that encounter that many of you are probably watching today, where they were on the ground and grunted that buck in. So they went right back to that same spot this morning. I'm anxious for him to get in and fill us in on their hunt. And moving forward with these podcasts, we're going to try to add a little more structure to them. We're going to start off today answering some frequently asked questions that we've been getting just in the last 24 hours from our viewership. Then we're going to dive off into several specific topics. We're going to discuss comparing your historical trail camera photos of bucks with historical weather data and how it can aid you this season. We're going to talk about that subject at length, and also the acorn crop and what it is doing to the deer in our area. And then we're going to wrap up the show talking about this weekend's potential conditions for hunting and what we can do to help you out in the field on your hunts in these next couple of days. So with that said, let's go live and get this thing rolling.
All right, sounds good.
All right, we are now live on both Facebook and Instagram. And Greg Clements and I are sitting here today waiting on Zach to get in from the field. I'm sure he's going to be rolling in any minute and joining us at any moment. I'm ready to hear what they've seen today in the woods so far. But to start off today's podcast, we're going to talk some frequently asked questions. Jake, what are some of those questions that we were just discussing that needed answered?
A guy yesterday asked if it was too early to be hunting mornings, if he should just stay out, or if he should be hunting mornings this time of year.
Was he on public or private land? Do you remember?
He didn't say which.
Okay. That's all going to depend, at least I think, on your situation. With us, we definitely hunt mornings. Zach killed his buck in Nebraska in the morning, you know, hunting in the middle of a bedding area. And that's something that we do a lot. I mean, that's what Zach was doing this morning. He was diving into a bedding area trying to get on those bucks that him and Sean were on just a few days ago. It's definitely possible to kill a buck coming back to his bed this time of year during the morning. However, they do tend to come in to their beds a little bit different than they do when they leave. They always want to J-hook or hook into the wind before they go into the bedding area. So if you're sitting right over the bed, it may appear to be a cool setup, but it may not work if that buck circles downwind of you before he goes into the bed. I mean, Greg Litzinger out east does that and has success with it, but...
Yeah, I wonder if we should back up and maybe talk about maybe his specific situation. I guess we don't know what it is. Like, you know, the risk versus reward before we get, like, in specifics of deer movement.
Right.
Like, on public land, we have so many different spots that we're not so worried about burning, you know, a small piece of property out, for example. Like, if he's asking,
I guess,
you know,
he
if
didn't
it's
really say what his situation was.
Right.
He just asked kind of broadly if it was
too
early.
Like, you know, a small property, you know, if it's risky getting in, you know, maybe it's not worth your time quite yet.
Right. Yeah, and like he said, it's going to just depend on the situation each time. But a lot of folks don't hunt mornings this time of year.
Right.
And they may be missing out on some pretty good hunting.
Yeah, and I think some of it's access dependent. Like when Brody and I hunted the other morning, it's situated close to bedding areas, but we're able to slip in with the kayaks, 100-yard walk quietly to the stand, and we can get in and out without really disturbing anything close to those bedding areas. So
right.
That's a spot I feel comfortable hunting in the morning this time of the year.
Sure.
And it
sure
worked out for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's just goes back to what we were just saying. You know, I mean, you may not, if you're in private land scenario, for instance, and you have smaller property, maybe you're hunting one specific deer, it may not pay for you to go straight in the morning unless you are really confident in your setup. I'm not saying don't do it. It may work to do it. You know, Andre DiAquisto goes in there and kills them in the morning, sets up right over their bed, right, and then waits for a right weather and moon day, possibly the right set of trail camera images, and then goes in there and kills them, you know, and it's just crazy. But we're not up to his skill level just yet.
No, that's totally different level.
But. Yeah, that I'm sure that's taken a lot of time to learn how to do that. However, that being said, it's doable. You can kill them in the mornings this time of year, and it's just going to depend on the amount of pressure that you want to put on them. And one thing that I will add is when we hunt in the mornings, we go in before daylight and we use those headlamps every single time. And we use them to set up the stands and everything. I mean, I know we've beat that horse, you know, to death here lately, but that I think that is a huge part of getting in the mornings without disturbing deer.
Yeah, getting in ahead of them, doing it quietly, using the headlamps. And then, you know, with Brody's and my hunt the other day, it was dead calm out. We hung two stands and, you know, we got in ahead of the deer and everything, you know, worked out as far as that. So taking or making sure you have enough time, you know, if you're going in and having to hang stands, especially on a quiet morning.
And this early in the year, too, sit a while. Like, don't just give up after the first hour of daylight. Yes, that's probably your highest odds time of seeing a buck come through. But like Zach and Sean just saw and what we've seen many, many times is mid-morning, many times those bucks get back to their beds before daylight. And mid-morning, they get up, stretch their legs, and make a few rubs or whatever. They were sparring, fighting in that field at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
You know, and it was a decent weather day, but it wasn't like, you know, one of the great ones.
Yeah.
It was more of just your average October weather conditions, and they were up moving within that safe zone in the bedding area in the middle of the morning. So if you sneak all the way in there, don't give up on it in the first hour or so. Sit it out for as long as you can.
If you're making the effort to go in early and hunt close to a bedding area like that, sit till at least 10, you know, 11 o'clock, make it worth your time, and you never know when you're going to get a buck up on its feet later in the morning like that.
Jake, do we have any questions pertaining to this one? So far?
No. People are asking about trail camera pictures. I see one about Ray, and then somebody's asking about the buck on the home screen, which you guys are going
to get to. Right. We're getting ready to talk about him. In fact, that's the next segment that we want to address here on today's podcast. Greg and I are going to be discussing our historical trail camera photos and comparing them to historical weather data. And the first thing that you want to know is where to get historical weather data. And it's at wonderground.com. You can just go to Google and type in historical weather data, and this is going to pop up in the search feed as one of the first things. You go on to Wonderground, you just type in your location, and then you type in the dates on here that you that you're wanting to look at as far as historical weather data, and it shows you what the barometric pressure was hour by hour, what the wind was, what the wind speed was.
Very detailed.
Yep. And then we go back and we cross-reference that with all of our trail camera pictures. This one in particular is of a buck in the buck nest last year that we got on camera during daylight, as you can see. But I was picking this deer up on two different cameras quite a bit throughout the month of October. And we weren't really actively checking these throughout the month. We just kind of letting them soak, you know, just to see what was moving through this area. This is actually the area that we walk into the buck nest, so our scent is all over the place right here. But this particular 8-pointer showed up on daylight a couple of different times on this camera. And then about 400 yards away, there was another camera positioned where he showed up in the middle of the night some during the rut. But what we've done is we've went back and we've looked at our dates and our times and compared it to that historical weather data on wonderground.com. And I noticed that this buck, both times, he's about a week apart. I had pictures of him coming through this little opening. I think there's more pictures on there. Well, I just closed out of it. Nope, there they are. Yeah, he's coming through this little opening during daylight, and as you can tell here in these next set of pictures, we're walking right here to get back in there to the buck nest. So this camera is in a spot where there's a lot of human scent, and we're still picking that deer up coming through there. The point is that once I went back and checked those photos, I noticed he came through there twice in a matter of 10-day period, both times headed the same direction, both times on the same wind. And the weather temperature was slightly different. One time it was actually raining a little bit and kind of overcast. The other time it was sunny. But both times he was coming in there on a southeast wind. Yep. And I don't really know exactly where he was going into bed, but one thing we do know is year after year, as these bucks get older, they become more and more habitual. And this deer in particular, I know, is still alive in that area. So I'm thinking about these pictures a lot this fall. And a couple of them, or one of those daylight movement days, was on the 23rd of October. I've got my dates wrong down here because, you know, I didn't pay attention when I set the camera up. So
which
I had
is important when you're wanting to go back and look at historical data. Otherwise, you're going to have to go back and like back calculate when you put the camera out and what the time was. So make sure you get your date and time set correctly.
Yeah, it took me a good 20 minutes to recalculate and figure out which day it actually was that he was showing up. But it was on the 23rd, and it was at 8:30 in the morning, 8:45 in the morning. He's headed back into a bedding area there on a southeast wind. So, you know, and in about a week and a half, it's going to be that same general time frame during the first part of the pre-rut. You know, I guess we're in the first part of the pre-rut now, but around the 20th through the 25th of October, when I want to be hunting this deer in that same general area. So I've got cameras set up in there right now, kind of looking for him. But if we get those same conditions in that five-day period where I was picking him up right there, I'm definitely going to be hunting this spot. And Greg's been a little more organized with his. You can show him some of your stuff here too.
Yeah, last year I ran a trail camera in the area. It's actually where Brody and I hunted the other day. I ran the camera from late September all the way through late November. And then after the season, went back and referenced all the times that I wouldn't say mature buck, but a buck of 3.5 years of age or older passed through that area. And here's one of the bucks. So anyways, I looked at I input all that data into a spreadsheet. Let's see if that'll pull up.
And they may not be able to see it.
Yeah, you may not be able to see it, but everything highlighted in yellow there is when a buck of 3.5 years or older passed in front of the camera during daylight, and then I looked at the weather conditions for that when he went through there. And the vast majority, I would say 75 to 80% of those times that a buck of 3.5 years or older passed in front of the camera was on a southerly type wind. And that stand is set up more for a northerly type wind.
I like how much detail you've got here too in your analysis.
Barometric pressure, temperature.
Is there a way to adjust the brightness on that thing, Greg? Where we can.
I don't know quickly if there is or not.
Pinch it down. Well, we'll fix that later. But anyway, Greg's got the specific deer charted here along the left side of his chart. And then he's got their direction of travel, you know, the date, the time, the temperature, dew point, humidity, barometric pressure. Then he's got the wind direction, and then he's even got the wind speed there. And all of that data is helpful when looking later on down the road. Especially, I like how you're charting individual bucks as well. Right. You know, you're inferring that every buck 3.5 or older in there, right?
Yeah.
Is got some consistency to their movements, but you're also charting individuals and how they're moving through there.
Yeah, and when that camera ran, almost every single day, regardless of wind direction or weather conditions, does and fawns passed through that area, small bucks as well. But when it came to charting those bucks of 3.5 years of age or older, there started to be more of a trend, and that's what we are just referring to there, where 75 to 80% of those encounters were on southerly type winds. Like I said, that spot sets up, and I'd been hunting it on a northerly type wind, and I never really saw any of those bucks while I was on stand. So that gave me, you know, that gives me information now to go into this season to hunt that differently. And I actually have a stand set up now
for
the southerly
type of wind.
Yep.
That's cool. And that's some stuff you can learn. We definitely learn more after the fact from trail camera photos than we do during the season.
Yeah, there's some cameras we won't even check throughout the season, but go back at the end of the year, and you can learn all kinds of information about what deer are in the area and their movement patterns, and also hunter movement patterns as well.
You know, right.
You pick up on areas that just have a lot of traffic, whether it be deer hunting, squirrel hunting, you know, during shotgun season, archery season. You can just learn a lot of information by letting cameras go all season long.
Yeah.
So we talked about long-term, short-term approaches before the trail camera use.
Right. But, you know, these cameras and these situations are stuff that we do all the time. Yeah. We've got them set up right now. Brody and I set that one up over a bed that we actually busted two mature bucks out of during late summer. We spooked two mature bucks out of there, and we set the camera up over the bed, and we probably won't check it until Christmas. But when we do, we should have a ton of images there to look through throughout the fall, and we might be able to gain a lot of insight into when they're using that bedding area.
Absolutely.
You know, and what we'll, and if we get a buck on camera then using that bedding area, we're going to go back and cross-reference it with this Wonderground historical data and then potentially be able to figure out a pattern for next year under those same situations.
Right.
You know.
I see a question that's relevant right now. He's wondering if you're counting daytime and nighttime photos or just daytime.
Yeah. In that spreadsheet I had, there was nighttime photos in there.
We're definitely taking that into account for sure.
I can't remember right now if there was still that same pattern.
Right.
For after nighttime movement. I think there was.
Yeah.
But obviously daytime movement is what we're more concerned with because that's when we can be in there and have a chance to shoot them.
Right. And I also, with that 8-pointer, those pictures of him that we were looking at a moment ago, I had two cameras set up about, where did those go, Greg? There they are. I had two cameras set up about 300 yards apart in that area, and I was picking him up on this one and the other one. However, on the other one, he was there at night. From early October through the end of November, I'd pick him up sporadically, and he would always be there at night or right on the fringe of daylight. And on this one, he's on there several times in daylight. And it's only a matter of 300 yards, you know, where if you set up your stand up by that other camera, you're out of the game. You're not seeing him and killing him, most likely.
Right.
If you're down here at this one, you may very well kill him underneath the same or under the same conditions or similar conditions.
Yep.
So that just goes to show you how tight their area is, especially during the month of October, and how you got to remain mobile and move around on these things. But what else you got?
The guy suggested Deer Lab, and I don't know much about that. I just know it's a program that.
Yeah, and there's several programs out there.
To it or not,
right, there's several programs out there that that operate similarly to that. Me and my buddy Joe Elzinger sent me a spreadsheet that he created, where you can actually input the data for that day, and it brings in all the weather data automatically.
Right.
You know, that he made.
Takes a lot less work as compared
takes
to
a lot less work than what you did right. And what I do going back through on Wonderground on each specific day. But it's definitely useful to monitor that stuff after the fact. No doubt about it. Our next topic.
Food source is changing soon. Somebody was asking you about that last night, I guess.
Yeah, and that actually leads into our next topic that we were going to discuss today. And that was just the incredible amount of food sources that are available to the deer right now, especially this year. Up to this point, we haven't had a frost yet in southern Iowa, northern Missouri. At least to my knowledge, we haven't. All the green food sources are available and lush. You know, alfalfa is lush and thick. Clover is too. Deer are hammering those areas. They've got piles of acorns this year.
Yeah.
Reds, whites, pin oaks, everything is dropping. And all the crops are still in. You know, it's been too wet here recently for farmers to get out there. And as we mentioned, we haven't had a frost to really burn those leaves off and dry the corn down. You know, so a lot of the crops are still standing. So the deer have got a lot of cover right now. They've got a lot of food sources to choose from
right
at this time. And it's making them tough to hunt. They're spread out all over the place is what we're noticing, especially up in the oak flats. They can bed up in those giant, you know, big timbered areas where there's hardwoods. They can bed off those points, a lot of times wind-based, and they can stand up and be feeding on acorns in their bedding area.
Yep. You know, that's what you experienced in Missouri with that buck bedding close.
Exactly.
To that. Yeah.
Yep.
And he was not moving very far.
He did not make it
if
very
you
far.
You weren't right on him. You would have never known he was in the area.
We were 100 yards, right about 100 yards from the bed itself, Zach and I were, and he showed up at the very last inkling of light. And at that point, we'd already seen several deer come out of the bedding area and work past us up into the oaks.
Right.
You know, but he actually came in munching on acorns. I saw him with probably 15 minutes of legal light left, and he made it maybe 10 yards in that last 15 minutes. That just goes to show you how slow they're moving. So if you're not seeing them right now, that's probably wise, because those big boys are standing up out of their beds and they're walking 10 feet munching on acorns.
No.
Within that specific scenario, though, he was bedded just off the point of the oaks where the transition went into the marsh.
Mm-hmm.
So it went into the low marsh grass and got real thick right there where those two habitat types merged, and he was bedded right there and then working up into the oaks.
Sure.
Which last year, we didn't have very many acorns. They might have still been bedding in the general vicinity, but they were actually going out into the marsh and the low-lying stuff to feed on natural browse more than they were feeding on acorns. I think that has a lot to do with what's going on at the buck nest as well.
Right.
Because it's a big creek bottom with just tons of natural browse. And up next to it, there's, you know, 500 acres of rolling
oaks and
hardwood oaks.
Yeah.
And that's where they're all at, we believe. Anyway, Zach just got in from his hunt this morning and said that they saw some bucks. He's going to come over here and join us in a minute if he wakes up.
He looks kind of tired.
It was a 2 o'clocker.
Yeah, 2 o'clock in the morning. Yeehaw.
I see a good question on Facebook. You can probably read it better than I can, Aaron. Jumping back to trail cameras.
Okay, of the bucks you guys killed last year as a team, what percent of the bucks did cameras assist in the harvest? Or was it more just scouting efforts and being near the bedding areas? I'm trying to think. Cameras probably didn't.
I don't think one of them's that. In the timber nest,
no camera back there.
No
camera.
Mine, we.
No
the
camera.
First time we'd hunted that place.
We saw that buck, though, the night before you killed
right.
him. So we knew he was in there. Get right over there on the corner, Zach, if you want. So I'm trying to think. Did we. Eric's buck?
Nothing there.
So
basically,
either.
Almost none of the bucks we shot last year had to do with trail cameras. But going into this year, we're armed with a lot more information.
Like you said, it's
like
a lot
I said
last
about
year's data.
Last year's yep. data, and I've got a stand set up for a southerly type wind in that spot. Hopefully, that will, you know, yield an opportunity at a buck.
Yeah. So I guess to answer your question, no. watch yourself, Greg.
All right.
No, last year the trail cameras didn't necessarily assist with any of our kills. In 2015, though, they did.
Mm-hmm.
The buck that you killed in 2015, mm-hmm. that was attributed a lot to trail cameras.
And yours as well.
And mine, yes, and the decoy buck.
And actually, with Greg's 15, too, we were running trail camera back on.
Back to the deep ridge.
Yeah, that is true.
Just that
a ridge over, and there was all kinds of bucks in there.
Yeah, but we learned, I guess it's just a culmination of things. You know, it can happen any which way possible. Last year with my buck, for instance, we cut a bunch of big tracks leading up into a bedding area. So trail cameras are just one piece. You know, with the timber nest, we'd scouted it prior mm-hmm. and figured it would be a good spot. We went in there, the sign was there, so we hunted it, and that's how we found those bucks. With Greg's, we went in there, scouted it the day before, had never even set foot in that area, saw his buck, mm-hmm. went in the next morning and killed him. And with mine, we'd hunted it one time prior to that, and then we went in, cut several big sets of tracks, read the sign leading into the bedding, and went in there and killed him.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at a number of different scenarios there, but it's all attributed to various types of scouting.
No.
You know, and that's what we mean by scouting. It's not just boots on the ground looking for sign. It's trail camera scouting. It's driving around. It's observation sits. It's a combination of all of those things. But
it's walking out of your tree stand location and scouting your way out too. I mean that.
Oh, absolutely!
That's how you encountered the bug the other day.
You're scouting all the time
today. I mean, I think I got a tree now, so I don't. You know.
Well, what'd you see this morning?
Saw a year and a half old buck and a 2 year old buck. We moved further to the north. Got in there in the dark, and there was some deer standing there right where Sean and I dropped the stands. They were standing there feeding on acorns. Looked like does, but I couldn't tell for sure. They eventually just got nervous. We were standing there watching them, and they got nervous and bounded off. We kept going, and they just were blowing up in there.
Right.
And we kind of, there's those pin oaks, and there's like a wall of pin oaks around that field. And it's just so hard to get a lane when you're hanging and hunting in there to shoot anything.
Yeah, because we can't trim on public. Mm-hmm.
So it's just nothing but pin oak branches falling down everywhere. So we kind of worked around that edge, and finally we were like, let's just go to that other further in. We went in there, and we had a pretty good tree. Had a deer come right under us in the dark. Couldn't tell what it was, but I think it might have been the year and a half old buck.
Sure.
And he came back later, right when the wind picked up, though. When those deer went towards that bedding area. Right when that same thing that happened in Nebraska, right when the wind started coming from the south is when they started moving in.
We've discussed that, too. On really calm mornings.
Yep.
It seems like they get in there and they get close, but they almost want to wait. Or maybe they even go and they bed down somewhere, but then once the day wind picks up to where it's probably going to be for the rest of the day, they move.
It wasn't a wind shift. It was just the wind picking up.
Yeah.
It was calm.
It was calm to wind. And it was weird. I mean, literally saw the two-year-old, and then he got out of sight, and I looked back, and that other one was going right to the same place. They were going right to that little patch of cedars that I was, you know, hoping that...
Just moving quickly.
Yeah, to bed. Going right to it.
Yep.
Talk about what our theory was on when that buck bedded down first in Nebraska and that thick stuff.
Yeah. So in that area, where I was at today was kind of where some ridges fall down. So I think that a little bit of terrain has to play in the way they were bedding today. But in Nebraska, it was flat in that bedding area that we were hunting. And it was really, really calm that morning. And he went out. It was him for sure walking around us right at first light. And then he bedded down out in the middle of that thick stuff.
Right.
And he had no wind, and there was just no way, when we went back and we looked at the bed, there was just no way he wasn't going to hear a predator coming. I mean, from 200 yards away, he was going to be able to hear him coming. I guess that's probably an exaggeration. The bedding area probably wasn't even that big, but as soon as it hit the thick stuff, you know, I think that he would have heard him coming. But as soon as that wind started blowing from the south, he got up and was going to get on the north edge of that so he could look out, is what we assume was happening.
Right.
But it was just like that, right? When the wind picked up, that's when he got up. But because it was dead calm for like...
8:30 in the morning.
8:30 in the morning is when he got up.
And I think the thing to mention here is sometimes they're not moving very far when they do that. Yeah. Sometimes they might move 100 yards.
Yeah. No, the ones today were moving at least 100 yards. And it was at about 8:30 probably.
Yep. I've seen them do that. I saw a mature buck in the buck nest last year. Actually, it was a wind switch. Mm-hmm. It had been coming out of the south all day until right after lunch. And then from noon to 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening, it was switching from south clear around to northwest.
Yeah.
And we actually saw that buck up moving, you know,
was that
4 hours.
That was the second day in there, right?
And it was, this was in closer towards the rut. This was the third or fourth or fifth day in there. And it was this wind switch day. So we couldn't go in at the time we wanted to. We had to wait for the wind to actually switch. But as soon as it was switching, we moved in, and me and Sean were actually hanging the set. And he looked up, and he's like, oh, big buck. You
know,
that
was the 6x7, right?
Yes, yeah. And he was actually moving from a south wind bedding location into the buck nest, which sets up better for a westerly wind. And he was doing that in the middle of the afternoon. I don't know if that's common to expect, but it's definitely interesting to see him do that. You know, and I can't, if a mature buck is moving in the middle of the day, he's doing it for some reason.
Yeah.
Like, that's one thing we can infer, is that they always are moving for some reason. Like, and they're not just randomly walking about the woods. They do everything for a reason.
I'm definitely feeling confident of mornings, though, going in and sitting over a bedding area that you can see fair amount in. Like in Nebraska, like that bedding area that Sean and I encountered that buck a couple days ago. Because I think you can see, like, the buck nests, too, to a certain degree. Going there in the morning, ideally, they're not in there. This morning, they were in there eating acorns, which is, it's odd how that sets up, because the acorns are actually inside of the bedding area. So I think they feed at night out in the alfalfa fields, then they come back through the bedding area to eat acorns, and then they go back into the bedding area. So that's a unique little situation there. But
yep.
I think sitting over a bedding area in the morning, just overlooking that, especially if the wind's going to pick up throughout the morning or something, so you can observe that movement, yeah, is a good that. Putting you in a good position.
So how early did you guys get in this morning? How early would somebody have to get in, do you think?
I don't know that you could get in there and not run into deer, seriously, because we got up at 2:45 and we were there at 4. We were walking in at 4.
Walking in at 4, so that's 3 hours before shooting time, roughly. Mm-hmm.
And, like, there were still deer in there. There were no, and it's interesting, though. Like we talked about the other day, the whole way in, there's no deer in that river bottom. But as soon as you hit that line of oaks,
that's where they are. Yep.
And that's where all the sign is, the fresh tracks, the rubs, the scrapes.
Yep.
I mean, it's pretty cool. It's cool to see. It makes it a son of a gun to get in there and not spook deer. But
right. Well, that's a challenge a lot of people are dealing with. Sometimes you just have to hunt. You know, and learn. That's mm-hmm. part of it.
So knowing that, would you go back and do it again?
I think I'd do it again. I think I just, the problem is I should have looked a little bit better. It's just so hard in pin oak trees, I think. I don't like hanging in pin oaks because they're loud and then you just can't ever see anything. So, and the other thing is, I don't know if they're going to go through there in the evening or if they're not just going to shoot straight out to those alfalfa fields.
Go browse a little bit on the oaks and then out to the alfalfa. Mm-hmm. That's one thing we are noticing. They're hitting the green clover and alfalfa, and we talked about that earlier right now. But the oaks are definitely the big, big draw. Before we move on to our next portion, what you got some questions there, Brody?
I might be jumping just a bit ahead with this question, but they're kind of asking about that cold front that's supposed to be.
Yes, we're getting ready to talk about that.
Yep, that was the question then.
And anybody that has specific questions to their weekend hunting plans, please, you know, comment right now. Give us some feedback. We'd like to help you. You know, if we don't get them answered during the podcast here, we will try to answer them after the fact. So with that said, that does lead us into our next portion of today's show, I guess, and that's talking about this weekend's hunting. Tomorrow it looks like rain, hot,
it's warm. Yeah, it's gonna be warm until then. It's dropping
pretty
right
significant southerly winds tomorrow, and then Sunday it's gonna flip-flop. It's gonna be highs in the mid-50s, lows around 39-40 degrees,
northwest winds.
It'll be the first real true northwest wind cold front that we've had, I think, in October. We've had some good ones, you know, but they've been funky northeast.
Yeah, a rainy day.
Rainy, very northeast. Yeah, I mean, not to say those are any different. Those are still good, but
yeah, last year we had a lot more of those, like, real high pressure, cold northwest.
That's
going to
be
that was awesome.
That's going to be Sunday.
Yeah.
And I would think if that rain pushes out Saturday night in the middle of the night and it's and the wind is switching through the night, I would think Sunday morning would be really good. Mm-hmm. And Sunday evening would be good as well.
I think Sunday morning is going to be good regardless.
I think so.
It should be real cold that morning.
One thing Luke is doing this weekend that's interesting is he's planning on hunting. He's hunting private land and he's hunting for one specific buck. So he's much more careful in how he's doing it than we traditionally are. Mm-hmm. He's going in tomorrow, and he's going to wait for that rain cover, and he's going to go in and check his cameras in that spot if in the middle of one of those storms if he can, mm-hmm. you know. And he does that a lot. He picks those stormy, rainy, nasty days to go and run his cameras mm-hmm. And believes that it helps. And it makes sense, you know. I mean, you go in there during the rain, you know, all the deer are probably bedded. And they're not going to be up moving around, and a lot of that rain could cover your scent, you know. So he's going in to run his cameras tomorrow so that he can make a plan for Sunday. But, hunt your good stuff on Sunday. Anything that you've got set up for northwest wind, you're going to want to be sitting at, I have a feeling. And what we were discussing earlier in the episode is right now in our area, at least, they are hammering the oaks. I mean, Brody, you just got done talking about it. Brody and I sat last night down in the buck nest bottom, and we didn't see hardly anything, just a few does. But we might have had one oak tree within 300 yards of us. And that's where those deer were at. Like, we looked up, and there was two does standing right underneath the one oak that we had anywhere close to us. And we had that feeling going into it, you know. we felt like they were not in there this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, did the sign tell you that? Was there any buck sign?
There was some buck sign on the way in, but that was in the clover. Mm-hmm. See? And that was probably night sign that they're leaving. But they're definitely feeding on that clover after probably feeding on the oaks. However, this was the one. There was no clover anywhere close to where we were at. We were just in that nasty creek bottom. You know, I wanted to try one more bedding area in there before giving up on that spot. And we didn't see much, just those does, but they were on the one oak tree that was within sight. No. You know, and they were just feeding underneath it like crazy. And a couple years ago, it wasn't in 2015, we had
in 15,
good
yeah.
acorn year. Mm-hmm. I remember going through those big timbers, you know, those rolling hardwood timbers that we've got around here, and seeing just tons and tons of buck sign.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing to keep in mind in those situations is the big bucks leave a lot of that sign on the top of the ridge, and they're doing that at night, mm-hmm. most of the time, the mature bucks are. They tend to stay back down, you know, over the lip on that one-third elevation. They bed there, they feed there, they travel there, or they even, around here anyway, they seem to go down in those ditches a lot. Mm-hmm. It seems like the acorns accumulate down there yeah. in the ditches. You know, when they fall off those hills, they get washed into the ditch, and those bucks can stand down in there and be out of sight and feed contently and not have to ever really worry about anything, and then move up onto the ridges into the more social deer areas at night. So that's something, I guess, to keep in mind if you're going to be hunting on Sunday. You know, and tomorrow may be good as well. It's just, it's going to be hot, high winds, and potentially severe right. weather yeah. even is what it's calling for here.
I got a guy in New York that says it's going to be 80 degrees. What would you recommend, hunting a water source close to bedding?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that would probably be the ticket.
The day that Jake and I hunted a water source, it was 85 degrees, and we were sitting there, and deer started showing up, and they were panting. Like, their mouths were open, like, and they were just running right into that water. It was pretty cool to see. So,
yeah.
Definitely if you
can. In Nebraska?
No, that was in Iowa.
Just
that was
recently.
The ghillie suit hunt.
Oh, yeah.
No, it was like they all of a sudden all just came at once, like the floodgates opened.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Another thing to keep in mind in hot weather, too, we saw this summer some. They tend to bed closer to water. Mm-hmm. They're not just going to use water.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this summer we saw, it was like a 90-degree day, and there was an old dry creek bed with just a little bit of water in it, and we were driving down the road and looked over, and there was two bucks bedded in the creek bed itself, like laying up underneath the root wad along the edge in the shade, laying on that cool moist dirt in the bottom of that creek. You know, and when you think about it, it's way cooler down in there than it is, say, in a field or something. For instance, they're going to favor that shade, they're going to favor those creek bottoms or water, or being real close to water, you know, just because it's cooler.
Yeah.
And they've got closer access to it.
When I was fishing in the summer a lot on my kayak, there would just be deer piling into the river, just standing in the river.
Yep.
Every night when I was yep. getting towards dark.
We've definitely seen that, especially with the early season hunts we've been on this mm-hmm. year, late September, early October, is a lot of those patterns are still, they're still there, especially on the warm days. They're in close to those creeks. What else you got, Brody?
Some guy was just talking about the pressure for Sunday and how you hunt that. If you hunt it when it's at its highest or like the next morning?
If in our area anyway, the pressure is going to be really low. It looks like, and you can find this stuff on Wonderground. It's a really handy site for this. The pressure looks like it's going to be lowest like tomorrow night. And then it's going to move out in the middle of the night and be consistently rising through Sunday morning and at its highest Sunday afternoon. You don't just want to hunt it when it's at its highest. You want to hunt it when it's rising.
Yep.
You know, that's like to your point. Sunday morning is going to be really good. Mm-hmm. And it's a steep angle. Like, it's going to rise fast and high pressure is going to move in fast. Though on those days, deer move.
I think Eric Barber, when he missed that 10-point you were filming him or whatever that thing was.
Yep.
You were filming him. I think the day after he missed that was actually the cold day.
Yep.
But the pressure was rising that day before.
Yep.
And you guys went in there.
Yep.
So, yeah, rising I think we've had the best success on.
Right. But, I mean, Sunday, when it's rising, when it's high, both of those times will be good, possibly even Monday.
And then
the subsequent days down the road when the wind switches back, I don't know how long it'll stay out of the north. It may only be out of the north for 1 or 2 days or less, but eventually it's probably going to switch back. And when it switches back, is also going to be a decent day to hunt.
It's not liking that chart. Its computer's freaking out for some reason.
Oh, that's all right. But yeah, I hope answers that question. You got any more, boys?
Nothing recent, no.
I just got kind of like a lighthearted type one, I guess. What's your favorite way to pass time while you're in the stand?
Last year,
an all-day rut hunt?
Eating brats was pretty fun.
Yeah, eating brats and fish and being miserable. Yeah. Well, I would say play on your phone, but that's not a good idea. Because
here's where Buck's gonna show up. Fantasy football. This guy loves fantasy football.
Yeah, I'm on that thing way, way too much. Yeah, if I was hunting by myself, I'd never kill anything. I'd be on there like, oh, dang it, Greg Olson's out, you know. What do you do? But I don't know. Smack. Necessarily have a good answer for that, because we're usually two guys in a tree, so. We're constantly talking about something up there to pass the time.
Filming stuff. And usually filming.
Yeah.
I like snacking, though. I think that's probably my favorite.
Yeah. Snacking and glassing.
Snacking and glassing.
Yep. Anything else, boys?
Oh, that's all I got.
Okay.
What's your favorite type of stand during the rut?
Wonder if he means like...
Pinch point or downwind bedding? Downwind of bedding.
Probably
pinch point downwind of buck bedding.
Yeah, that's probably it.
I mean, ideally, really.
Yeah. I would say, I don't know, bedding in the morning and in the evening, and pinch points during the day.
They vary so much. I mean, every spot's just enough different. We get excited for all different types of stands.
It seems like we have luck hunting pinch points some, but you just got to sit those things. Like a lot of folks say, oh, here's a good, you know, funnel or a good pinch point, and there's some sign there, and they expect to see deer. But the reality is, a mature buck, if there's one mature buck on that entire property, like, you're going to have to sit that thing for days and days at a time before maybe you see him coming through there. And Scott and Paul do that all the time.
That's just who I was thinking of. You know, they have so much success during the middle of the day, and one of their best spots is a pinch. Between two bedding areas.
But it's middle of the day.
Do you think that's when they're moving bedding areas in search of does?
I think so. Well, that's what we usually see.
We've always said, 10 o'clock?
Yep.
It's just, it's almost like when the toms lose their hens. It's like 9, 10 o'clock. Oh, here comes a buck.
Yeah, even for those guys, 10 to 2 is when they've killed so many deer in that 4-hour span.
Oh, yeah.
The one that I'm... shot and missed before. I missed him at 1, I think.
Yeah, like, and when we went into that hunt, we hung that set and we're like, we're probably going to see some deer these first few hours, but we're going to see a mature buck, and it's going to be around lunch, the middle of the day.
The 10-pointer that we saw, Sean and I saw the day prior.
That was a 2.
Was it 2?
Yep.
Yeah.
And he was moving bedding there. You know, and you said that they had been in there running does all morning, and you know, most of the day, and eventually he got up and he was just relocating bedding areas.
Yeah, he actually left a doe. Watched him leave a doe down that ditch.
Yep.
That was an interesting encounter. He was bedded with a doe in the very bottom of like a 30-foot ditch.
Right, right.
And then he just got up, circled that bedding area, and then just kept on going.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks will get burnt out on pinch point. I mean, Scott and Paul are resilient. Those guys will sit there and have done it many times where they get into the stand early in the morning and they don't see a single deer for 7 hours or something like that. And then boom, all of a sudden look down and here comes a big shooter. That's how it works in pinch points.
Probably not as patient as Paul and Scott. We can do it maybe 5 times a year, but it's tough to sit all day.
Right.
Very impatient.
We laughed about it, but really the best setups are those that pinch deer movement on the downwind side of bedding.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can hunt those all day.
Yeah.
You can sit your bedding area, you know, morning and evening, and you can also have the travel route in covered in case a buck is up cruising. And at that point, if you can pinch him down, that makes a lot of sense. Make sure everybody that's watching live right now, ask us a few questions. We're going to be wrapping up in about 10, 15 minutes here or less. So if you have any questions about your weekend hunting plans, just put them down in the comment section and we can answer.
I've got a question about Greg and Brody's hunt the other day about getting that deer out in the kayak, if you have any tips for that.
That's the first time I've ever done it. The two kayaks we took in the morning were too small to accommodate the deer. Had to get Zach's Jackson kayak.
Mm-hmm.
And the doe fit in the back of it. And did we use any straps to... No, we just used bungee cords that were in the back compartment to kind of tuck her legs. And I think we used another strap to keep her head down to keep it from flopping in the water. But Zach says if he shoots a buck... he's just going to put it kind of between his legs and just...
I'm going to try it at least. Theory. I think I'm going to just strap it down right between my legs. Now, mine's a sit on top.
Oh, yeah. That Jackson, that thing is... Yeah. That's a four-wheel drive kayak.
Yeah. It's a fishing rig. I like to fish off of it a lot, and that's why I have it. But, yeah, it's a big kayak.
It's a bigger kayak.
It's 11.5 feet.
And that doe actually sunk the back down a little bit. Like, a buck would not fit in the back. Physically it wouldn't fit, and also it is probably be sitting too low.
Right.
Like, well, I can tell you, it up, but... when we brought that buck out a few years ago in that icy water in that canoe with me and Zach Kurzieski, that thing sat in the middle, and we sat at the front and at the end of that canoe, and it was all we had to not flip that. I mean, it was sitting like this far out of the water, and it was just a nervous wreck paddling out of there. Hey, it was only 4 feet of water, so we just didn't want to get wet, but...
I think my theory is I'm going to put it between my legs and just take a ratchet and go all the way around the kayak.
Yeah.
And probably do two of them. And then see if it,
I also
see
thought
if it's too heavy or
if
not.
If that doesn't work, we'll just put the buck itself on
in
the
another,
kayak.
Yeah.
We know that'll
right.
work, and then tie it to another one
and
pull them out
that
way. So that should work. Well, hopefully we get a chance to see. I also thought at one time if we bought like an inner tube.
Yeah.
And then strap the buck to an inner tube behind the kayak.
That would probably work.
Yeah, he's just surfing back there, you know.
Just have to make sure.
Might get some funny looks if somebody sees it.
We get funny looks every time we go out there anyway. I mean, look at his hat right now. That thing is sweet. Old school Don Kiske Team Realtree hat. That's awesome.
We get plenty of weird looks when we double stack kayaks on the car driving down.
Oh, yeah. Put two kayaks on the Smurf and then strap a buck to the trunk of it on top of a blue tarp and then see what happens.
Smurf is Aaron's blue Ford Focus for anybody who doesn't know.
Oh, yeah. We strapped Mike's buck to the top of the trunk a few years ago, and we just ran the straps through the back window. And he was good. I mean, he wasn't going anywhere, but people were literally pulling off on the side of the road on the way home. I thought, I mean, it was fun, but it almost caused an accident, I think. What else you got, Brody?
I got a question. We've done this a couple times already this year, but how are you guys choosing a tree when you're going in the mornings in the dark?
Gotta have the headlamp.
Yeah.
And it's more difficult, for sure, because you can't see, you know, the trails
shooting
as well,
lanes.
Shooting lanes and stuff. But still, if you know the general area on the map that you're wanting to go and you get there... you can definitely make it work.
We had our tree picked out the other morning, Brody. That was nice and easy. But yeah, going in blind, not knowing what tree you're gonna hunt out of.
Well, we did that last year with your hunt and the buck that I killed.
Need
time.
We did
it
a lot. Time to go slow to get in quietly, and then just to think about what tree.
The thing is, you really got to trust that light. We have those things on the whole time. We're walking in, and we're not shining deer with them on the way in. You know, occasionally you run into a deer that's on your path that you're traveling to your stand, you know, and then you kill the light and you wait for them to move off. But they can't see it as far as I'm concerned, you know, and once you get to your area where you want to hang the stand, we're shining those lights on all these available trees and then we leave them on the entire time we're going up. The trick is getting in there before gray light.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be dark, because if you're climbing up with those lights on at gray light, I don't know if they can see the light or if they can just see better during that time. I firmly believe they can see better during gray light.
Better.
Yeah, if it's dark, I know for a fact they can't see. near as well, you know, because we've had them walk by us at, you know, in the wide open in the field at 20 feet and not even look, you know.
Now, I think one thing too, as you're going up, when you're picking it, once you pick that tree, one of the things that, like, sometimes if you're just thinking, oh, I'm going to try to get as high as I can, that's actually a disadvantage, especially this time of year. You end up getting so high that you're above the limbs that are in your, what would be your shooting lane. So what I'm doing when I'm going up is I'm looking, okay, do I need that fourth stick or do I, you know,
yep,
do I need to just go with three? And another thing that we talk about too, as cover starts to fall, you know, our leaves are starting to drop, but, you know, they'll really be gone in a month from now.
Sure.
When you're going in and hanging and hunting, what we found is it seems like the deer don't expect you as much. Like, when you have a permanent set, and we've all hunted permanent sets in the past, the deer, you know, you one doe sees you and she comes back every single time and looks right at you. But when you hang and hunt, it seems like a lot of times deer are just not even paying attention. They're not even picking their
head. Catch them by surprise. Yeah.
Your deer last year was a good example. Like, when I came in to help track, I was surprised at how low the stand was. Mm-hmm. Maybe 12 feet.
Yeah.
And the deer walked by at 10, 12 yards.
Yeah. And it was open.
Yeah.
It was pretty open. It was a windy day, though, and that attributed to it. If it had been still out, it might have been a little tougher. Yeah. But it was windy. It's harder for them to see. And your hunt with your buck, you guys were wide open in this little cottonwood, if I remember right.
Sean was wearing a black sweatshirt.
Yeah. Sean was wearing this exact sweatshirt because he had forgotten his camo coat.
Yeah.
By accident. Didn't.
And that buck saw you guys in the tree, but that goes back to your point about surprising the deer, basically.
Yeah.
You're catching them off guard. They have not seen something there before, or like the likelihood of them seeing something there before is pretty low.
Just for the sake of carrying too much weight, at least Aaron and I only ever carry four sticks.
Yep.
So we can't get higher than
14 feet unless you have, like, branches to help step up on.
And sometimes we really extend those things, but, I mean, we're still only ever, 14 feet up. And, like,
and when we're setting up on public, most of the time you can't trim here in Iowa. So we can't set up in a tree with optimal cover
trees
a lot of times. And there's two stands and two bows and tree arm and everything up there, but that's why a different tree.
I think it depends too on different areas with more pressure. Deer definitely look up more. I mean, we had a doe in Missouri walk right down the trail, look at us, and ran.
She was gone.
She didn't take any time. Now in Iowa, they're a little bit more lenient because it's not as pressured of a state. But yeah, I think if you know there's a fine line. You want to get as much cover as possible, but also, don't be as worried about it as you would be with a permanent set, I think.
Yeah, one other thing I'll add to that is you want to check your wind on your way up the tree. Because in some situations, especially if you're hunting in hillier terrain, your wind may change. 3 or 4 feet up that tree may actually change where your scent is going. Say, for instance, you're off the side of a point, you know. The further down in that valley that you get, the more that wind tunnel and the swirl that you're going to see. So if you hang a little bit higher up on the ridge or higher in the tree, you may actually start getting some of those more consistent winds that are coming over the top. So it's very situational.
I see a question about something you and Greg were talking about this morning, Aaron, about when you would recommend using a decoy, and that's something you guys want to do soon, is what you were saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, decoys could start working anytime.
Since they lose their velvet.
Yeah, no, I know guys that have used them in mid-September in Nebraska and have killed deer over them. I mean, not regularly, but it can work. Usually when I would break it out would be anytime we get a good cold front after about the middle part of October back in Nebraska. We hunted properties where there was, it was largely open fields. Like, a lot of times you'd have to bring a deer into you. They just wouldn't walk by.
Sure.
So we would start using them, you know, usually that first good cold front about mid-October. And probably the bulk of the good bucks that I shot in those areas, or that my dad, my brother, and I shot on that farm in Nebraska, was using a decoy between about the 15th of October, and the first week of November.
Right.
That was our go-to strategy, and I would absolutely start using one
now. And it can even work before or after that. I mean, I killed that buck a few years ago. Was that on the 10th or the 11th? That was on the 11th.
Oh, yeah.
We called him off the doe, and Eric's buck that we were talking about this morning, that was the first week of October, if I remember right.
I think it was, Yeah.
Yeah.
Very early.
I mean, that time frame you're discussing is your optimal time for sure, but they work.
I should say that's when we killed most of them, but we've used them on into late November. I remember one year out of the same stand, two nights in a row, my brother and I decoyed in bucks and killed them two nights in a row, the 29th and the 30th November.
Right.
So, yep.
Especially in an open area when you're calling at them, that can be the difference maker when they don't.
Sometimes there's just places you can't get a tree stand. It's like, well, he's bedding out there 250 yards in this little
we
patch.
We use them a lot in observation stands. If we're in an area where we think we're going to see some deer at a distance, where we could potentially call the one and bring one in, we don't like going in there without a decoy. Because what happens a lot of times is if you call to that deer in that open area, he's going to come in until he can see where the source of that sound is, and then he's going to turn and leave.
That even happened to me two days ago.
Right. Yeah, and I was even thinking when I was watching that hunt, I was like, you know what? Thinking, because hindsight's 20/20, obviously. But I watched you call at that deer, and I was like, you know, if Sean would have called that deer, because Sean was a good 15, 20 feet behind you, if Sean would have been the one that called, that deer might have actually swung around another 10 feet in front of you where you could have shot him.
Well, we even talked. It's like you could have taken an antler and stuck it out, and he'd have walked right to you. Yep. I almost guarantee it. Because he was looking right at me. He couldn't see me, but he was looking right through me trying to see where that deer was. And anytime like Sean would shift, I would shift, and any amount of noise that happened, he would perk up and look. But he just, the way we our cover was, he couldn't see us.
Right. Close that, Jake. I see a question from Sam Sohold asking when we're going to do a whitetail base camp out of the bus.
Whenever.
Come to town and we'll get on the bus. Sam actually has public land tees, so check that out. He owns that brand and is selling shirts and hats to try to promote public land hunting. And he's traveling all over the place in his bus. His bus is really sweet, by the way. You should follow Sam on his Instagram page.
You can follow, He had a story of him building the whole bus. It was pretty cool.
Just search Sam Sohold on Instagram and you'll see this entire bus that he's living out of right now. Awesome. He called me the other night and we talked for like an hour. And I'm like, are you in the bus right now? He's like, oh yeah, I'm just sitting in the bus. Like, where are you at? He's like, oh, I'm going mule deer hunting in the morning.
It's living the dream.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. But
going back to decoys, years ago I used to experiment with buck or doe, and doe decoy, and it almost seemed to ruin more opportunities than it did help. So I'd always use a buck decoy.
Sure.
Never even consider using a doe decoy.
Talk about how you set that up, too, from where you're sitting, like as far as wind goes.
Wind, set it up usually 20 to 25 yards. Maybe probably 20 yards is a good bet. And depending on the wind and what direction I think the deer is going to come from, set it up to where, you know, my shot is assuming they're going to approach the head of the decoy. Aaron and I were actually talking about this earlier today, and, you know, you assume that's what's going to happen, but it, you know, sometimes they'll come in behind the decoy.
Yep.
And the big takeaway is just to make sure that you consider if the deer comes in on the front or the back of the decoy, making sure you have shooting lanes to either side. Can't always predict what's going to happen.
Have shooting lanes.
We've seen it happen just about every different way.
And the good thing is, we were talking about open trees a while ago. If you're hunting in an open situation, you have the decoy in the wide open so that you can shoot all the way around it. Sometimes you don't need to worry as much about that when you have a decoy and you're calling to deer, because their focus is on that decoy when they come in. You know, they're not coming in looking for you up in that tree.
We could have done a dance when you shot that one in 15 and you never saw us.
Oh,
he was looking right at
it. And that was an open tree.
Yeah.
And he didn't pay any attention to it at all.
Yeah, I don't think I answered quite right as far as wind direction goes. You'll say if the wind is coming directly at me, I'll probably set the decoy out about 20 yards, and assuming the deer is going to want to circle around to the head of the decoy and get, you know, downwind of it to be able to smell.
Sure.
So the idea is, you know, the deer is going to come in between you and the decoy, or come to the head of the decoy. But again, it just depends on what direction that you assume the deer is going to come from. Sometimes I've had sets where I almost know for sure the deer is going to come from the right, have the decoy set up facing back in that direction, and the thought is it's just going to come directly at the decoy.
Sure.
It's, you know, situation specific, but
I hunted a spot last year. I know we were talking about it, watching the footage just recently, Greg, of that Corey and I put the decoy right up against the river so that they couldn't really circle downwind of it.
Yeah.
And they couldn't circle downwind of us. Yeah, and he stood there for forever, just a 2-year-old buck. Him. Oh, yeah. And multiple times I drew on him and everything and just put it right up against that river so he really couldn't get downwind of us or the decoy.
Decoy 8 is on the hit list, Scott Bruca says. Yep, that's a cool deer. Hope he gets him. Well, let's take one more, Brody, and then we'll wrap this up.
There's a bunch more. You just have to answer them in the comments after.
Right. Yeah, or we'll answer them on the next podcast. I want to try to keep these at about an hour starting out. And we've got some good ideas in the future, too, for these. We're going to try at some point to do some of these podcasts in the field, like on some of our scouting trips and hunting trips and stuff, if we can figure out how to get reception out there. Yeah. But go ahead, Brody.
Okay, this one's probably for you, Warb, with your experience in Missouri and looking forward here just a little bit. The sun is going to be there the 1st through the 5th. Do you think the seeking stage of the rut will be going on?
Yep. Bucks, and Greg and I were just talking about that this morning. In northeast Missouri, where I'm from, the best days of the season are typically between the 30th of October and the 5th or 6th of November. And up here, it doesn't seem to be the same. For whatever reason, on public, we just don't have as much luck during those days as we do down in Missouri. But, you know, it's only a 3-hour difference, so it's probably not that much that's attributed to it. But definitely during that time, you're going to...
I think part of it is pressure, you know.
Yeah, and we don't have... And that's the odd thing. Up in Iowa, everybody takes their vacation to hunt the first 7 days of November and comes to public land here in Missouri. Everybody's taking their vacation during rifle season, which is in the middle of the rut. So bow hunting during the first week of November should be pretty good, excuse me. Hunt scrapes a lot during that time. Calling works really well during that time. Maybe even use some of these same tactics that we've discussed. So
we lost Instagram.
Okay, Instagram's off. Okay. But
Jake and I were looking at a trail camera test spot where I shot that one in 15. We were looking at the trail camera just trying to get a feel for when those deer were moving through there. Just kind of, we were thinking about going in there or whatever, and we were looking, and somebody went in, or two or three guys actually, went in every single day, morning, in, out in the evening. From November or October 31st or November 1st till like the 5th, and then they came out with one of the deer card. So it's like, I think that's why we get so much pressure and why we have such a hard time on public in Iowa, at least, is when these out-of-staters come, is they just come in, they pound it, pound, and then they're gone, and then those deer just come right back. No kidding, the day that guy left with his cart, one full day went by, and the bucks went right back through there. But the whole time he was going in there, there was not a single buck on that camera. Not a single one of them.
Right.
And as soon as he was gone, there they were right back.
Yeah. I mean, they know. Mm-hmm. They pattern the hunters just like we try to pattern them, except they're way better at it than we are.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I guess to answer your question about Missouri, calling, scrapes, that's going to be key during late October, early November. And they will be doing some cruising and stuff. I mean, I've seen... the first does coming into heat around the 1st of November before, and had big bucks chasing does at 11:30 in the morning on the 1st, you know, so definitely more active during that time. Should have a good hunt. But I think that's going to wrap up for today, guys. I don't know if any of us are going hunting tonight. We got a lot of work to do and we need to sit down and discuss what's going on, but the private land guys have been out a bunch lately, and we're going to have lots more content here in just the next few days, especially with this cold front coming up. So keep a watch on our YouTube channel at The Hunting Public, and thanks for joining us.